So we have another couple of areas that the advisory team wants to go over. So, Doug, please continue.
Thanks, Keita. Doug Smith here.
Stand up.
I'm short, but anyway. Okay. Thanks, Rich. So we've been talking about and hearing lots of discussion on the plume definition and mapping requirements and the changes that we're proposing. And I wanted to point out a map that is on page 1-47 that's up there right now that Sue has. This was provided by the prosecution team in their original draft. And Sue, if you scroll down just a hair,
sure.
Just to show the bottom one there, that's fine. So it shows the mapping as of third quarter 2014 of the chromium plume. Of course, solid line. I wanted to highlight this solid line in the south because of the level of certainty. We really know what's going on there. We've got a lot of data points there, and so therefore, hence the solid line, as opposed to the dash line for the chromium in the north. There's less certainty, as everybody as the prosecution team and PG&E has stated that there's less certainty up there. And so the advisory team added the word uncertain plumes up there and added that throughout, as you probably saw, to distinguish the southern area from the northern area and what's going on up there. So we've had some great input on this, and it doesn't seem like there is one solid answer yet. We haven't heard to address everybody's concerns, and that's our job. We've got to come up with something. So we're going to try to take all the input that we heard, various viewpoints, and try to craft something, maybe something that looks more akin to what's up here. I don't know. We're not sure. The input has been great and very helpful.
And hoping to generate ideas for the 30th comment deadline.
Oh, yes. And hopefully there are some other ideas, of course, that you guys can submit by the comment deadline of September 30th. So we're all ears. We're all ears. You know, submit stuff. So you had a question?
I wanted to ask a question.
State your name.
To clarify. Oh, Lisa Dernbach, Lahan Water Board. Your change for adding the word uncertain, was uncertain meant to apply to existence or size? Not origin. What is the uncertain in reference to?
Doug Smith? The word uncertain was to be an adjective to modify the word plume. So it refers to everything dealing with chrome in the north. And it's everywhere we put it. That's what...
I got the follow-up question. Lori Knepfer. We have, as the maps that PG&E submits, they submit data. So there is certainty in the data. There is chromium being measured in the north. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of maybe what's confusing, is that there are monitoring wells and there are domestic wells that do contain chromium. And as Kevin mentioned, some of those are high, some of them are low, and not always everything inside the line is above 3.1, but there is data that shows there's chromium concentrations above 3.1. So anyway, that's something that we just wanted to understand. If the uncertainty had more to do with the origin, whether it came from the compressor station or whether it had to do with a sense of uncertainty around whether or not there was chromium at certain concentrations in that area. Because we consider the dash lines We agree with TG&E that they could use dashed lines in mapping because they don't have spacing. They don't have access. So there's not as many data points in this area. So they're having to extrapolate the line based on a limited number of well points. But we have both domestic well and monitoring well data. So that's certain. And
yes.
Kimberly Cox, Regional Board. The map that you're showing up there, who developed that map? Was it the prosecution team or the advisory team, or where did that map
sure.
come from?
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah. Rich Booth, the base map that you see is generated by the prosecution team. The only modification the advisory team has made to that map, I believe I'm correct in saying, is simply adding the word uncertain. And we use the same font and coloration and underline for that map as we did for all of our changes in the order. Red, underline, are additions that the advisory team made.
Okay, thank you. The prosecution team made an assertion that if the language that the advisory team is proposing is included in the CAO, that we would see presentations from PG&E similar to the map on the right in the back. Does the advisory team agree with that assertion?
Rich Booth, the PG&E, as any discharger, can and has submitted their interpretation of where plumes exist, the origin of the Chrome 6, and so forth. So the short answer is yes. That's not the final word. The Water Board has the final word.
Do you see any, I think as a board member, I'm very concerned about the health of the community from a public health standpoint. Do you see any risk to public health in changing the language, adding your proposed language in the CAO?
Rich Booth, absolutely not.
Okay. One last question. The map in the back on the left has a northern plume boundary that is very different than the map there. Can somebody fill in the migration of the plume from there to there, because it appears to have morphed in size and morphed in direction and changed in size? Thank you.
I'd like to, Rich Booth, I'd like to defer that to someone from the prosecution team.
Lisa Dernbach?
Yes. So this map was first quarter 2014, and when PG&E submitted it, as Lori mentioned before, there was limited monitoring wells, and they connected all the monitoring wells. And even though there was an absence of monitoring wells, like right here in the middle, PG&E, in a subsequent map, then separated those two plumes because they couldn't get access to install a monitoring well. So rather than say, we have no data to show they're connected, they just disconnected the two plumes, even though there's no data verifying it, that they're not connected.
Kimberly, and for anybody, my name's Lori Kemper, and for anybody who wants to look at the actual data, it is shown here. There is a monitoring well in this area that's at 2, and well, the total pump is 3.9, and there's also monitoring wells here that are 3.6. So in this particular quarter, you know, the concentrations were above 3 in this middle area, and I don't have, you know, the data that, because we've had another year's worth of data being collected, so these monitoring wells may now be less than 3, which is partly why they would have separated the plume. They'd say, okay, above it, the numbers are higher, and below it, the numbers are higher. So that shape does change.
Lisa Dernbach again. So Sue, could you scroll to show the upper part of this plume? There you go. So actually, this Halsted Road is actually very similar to up there on the map. So they are consistent because they're using the same monitoring well data.
So it's really just this kind of cutoff right here. Just because, and that may have more to do with that data.
And this map reflects third quarter 2014, and this the map on the left was first quarter 2014. So there was a slight change of data in this area, but on one side no monitoring wells, and on this side there were monitoring wells.
And for the purposes of the court reporter,
attachment to map of PG&E chromium groundwater plumes complete. Okay, I'll take them in the order that I saw them.
Darren Banks, Hinkley resident. This is to the advisory board. So, the word uncertain, it's a pretty powerful word, and I would ask, prior to 2011, when PG&E believes now that at Thompson Road they have it captured, so it's no longer flowing north, which is a good thing and a big deal. So from the late 1950s to 2011, according to PG&E's information and their data, correct me if I'm wrong, it's 1 to 3 feet per day, doing elementary math, according to the advisory board, water flow, where would it be at this point? It would be way far north. Because there was no capture prior to 2011.
Rich Booth, thank you for the question. That's an excellent one. Prosecution team asserts that the groundwater flow could have made it all the way to Harper Lake in the time since the release. PG&E disputes that claim. The advisory team believes, given the information available, and tried to make the case in his proposed order, that groundwater could in fact have reached from the compressor station to Harper Valley in the time allotted with sufficient certainty, if you will, to at least presume that the water flow has made it that far as a basis for our orders. There's not enough evidence. We don't believe the evidence the PG&E has submitted to dispute that claim is sufficient. So we therefore, as a regulator, as a protector of the water quality, have taken the stance that based on our calculations and our understanding of the groundwater flow, that groundwater could have made it all the way north. So we dispute that.
So then why the word uncertain? If you dispute that and disagree with that, why would you put that word? Because that's misleading.
Okay.
In appropriateness.
Okay. Groundwater flow may have made it all the way to Harper Lake. What we're less certain about, though, is how much of that chrome 6 in that northern area is a result of PG&E's release or is naturally occurring or a combination thereof.
Correct. And I'll agree with you. And without seeing the data,
Can you stand up and speak to the court reporter?
I mean, historical events, the river flowing, that's going to push the water through quicker. I mean, all of these variables throughout the last 60 years, I mean, and with their using their own data, their own calculation, it's to Harper Lake. So it's really discouraging as a community member to even understand why this discussion is even being had, because it's confusing.
This is Kim Niemeyer, and I understand that. And I think our intention wasn't to take away any of that, but I think with the USGS study coming, that it just seemed like it wasn't worth the fight on that, that we'll have that information, and we'll be able to change the order and what's required once we have that information. But there's a lot of information that PG&E has given to us where they dispute that. And so we know we have this information coming, and it's a way to acknowledge that at this point there's not a lot of data. We do have, like you said, and as Rich explained, information that could lead us to believe that that is in fact PG&E's chromium, but let's wait for the USGS study, as I think what that uncertainty is meant to accommodate.
So my response to that is that the Water Board staff has agreed, we've all came to an agreement to not change things until that USGS study tells us differently. I mean, we've agreed to that. And so an entity that hasn't set these meetings for the last 4 years, the way that these maps look now has changed dramatically over the last 4 years. And that didn't come easily. That came with hundreds of hours of some of us not being with our families, and sitting in meetings and learning and discussing with PG&E a lot of this information. Now, we didn't come at these conclusions easily because, as you can imagine, we fought it the entire way. So this was come with discussion using science, data, and information, not political, but science. And to change it now, that's absolutely not appropriate. If it doesn't matter, then okay, leave it alone. If that's your perspective. We, the community, you say, at this point, it's kind of like we don't really want to fight among this. Well, you know what? We would like you to fight for us. If we would like you to do the right thing. And that's what we're asking.
Okay. Okay. And I just want to remind everyone that today is a discussion where folks are going to explain the information that they are presenting, but it's not a debate. And then everyone will take this information, and then questions will be responded to after the September 30th date, correct, Kim?
Mm-hmm.
And so there will be written responses to much of this. Is that am I correct in that?
Yeah, that's correct. This is Kim Niemeyer. And so all this discussion is great, and we do have a court reporter, so we'll be able to go back and see what was said, but it is critical that you put your comments in writing, because that's how we will be responding to the comments, is when we get your written comments, we will respond to them in writing. So we are not going to be able to go back through this transcript and find, you know, every comment that was made and respond to every comment like that. We're going to respond to written comments. And that's how we will take all this information. Again, nothing's in stone. This is a draft. We'll take those comments, and what we heard today, and we will rearrange it, and we'll take input from the board, and then we'll have in November something that the board will be looking at to vote on.
Okay. Sir, you had a question.
Roger Killian, community member. When this came up that the CAO was going to change, and my understanding of it, correct me if I'm wrong, was to consolidate a lot of the orders. It seems like some of them in here are brand new orders. And my question basically is, why are we changing the way we did things until the background study is done and we have some chiseled in stone comments from the doctor that we can all look at? And then I know this is not the final order that's going to go out. I think we all agree with that. It's going to change. But why are we changing things now when we're in the middle of a study that's going to give us answers to a lot of this stuff? In particular, how we draw the plume map. It's always been drawn on a dot-to-dot, well-to-well type of a thing, and now we're going to start all over doing it in a different way. Why are we doing this in the middle of a study that's going on that's going to tell us what you need to do and give us a chance to do this? Because to change all this stuff the way it is, I sit here and look at these, and I'm fairly new to this. I've only been out here a year. I look at these plume maps. All of a sudden, they're all different from what I originally saw here a year ago, and they're changing constantly. And why are they changing? We haven't finished the study yet. And I don't think until that study's done, you've got a lot of data. There's no question about that. But until that study's done and we really, really, everybody understands that data, where this stuff is, how the geology is, and everything else, why are we changing the way that we're drawing all these maps? You know, I can understand where PG&E comes from. I'm not trying to beat anybody up. They want the plume map to show as small as possible. Anybody would. You know, and I understand what the water board's doing. They're trying to make sure that what's drawn out there and what's there is as close to what we can do as a plume map as possible. But we don't have all the information, so why are we changing the way this shows?
Kevin Sullivan with PG&E. I want to. There have been a lot of things attributed to me and to PG&E, and I just want to. I want to make sure that folks are clear on my understanding of the order. And what I think is the most important thing is that, regardless of where or how those lines are drawn, I believe there's a solid basis in this order as drafted for the meat of the action of sampling. Up there, you know, kind of if we draw a line here or there or a dotted line or a solid line, there's other parts of the order that still require what to me is the most important thing, which is let's sample the actual domestic wells, let's understand what's there, let's understand what people are, you know, have in the wells, and let's continue to sample the monitoring wells up there. So I want to make sure that that is kind of totally understood by folks, you know, here, that, you know, we're really talking about how to put a pencil on a paper here, that other parts of the sampling program are intended so that the sampling goes on, the data is collected, and we build that scientific understanding for both the people in this room and for Dr. Izbicki to move forward and come up with the right answers. I just want to make sure that folks don't think that if there is a decision made that draws something different, that anything substantial is going to change in terms of the data that we get or the information that we have, or the degree of protectiveness that's being afforded, you know, to people up there. We're still going to sample people's wells up there, regardless of whether or not there's a line on a map. So I think that's important to keep in mind to the earlier observation of trying to figure out the size of the container in the Tempest that we're talking about. I feel like this is more of a cosmetic thing. It's important, no doubt. But the sampling will go on, and that's our intent. You know, we want to make sure that, you know, we're getting all the data so that we can make good solid decisions. Okay.
Doug Smith, I just wanted to add a couple things, a couple important observations here. So the word uncertain was a big word for us, and that actually came from the consensus text from the prosecution team in PG&E. When they submitted their information to us, they said that the background chromium concentrations in the north were uncertain. And so what we did is, rather than disputing that, the advisory team took that consensus text and we wove it throughout this, trying to go off of that. When background concentrations are uncertain, then we looked at the chrome in the north and mapping it. One thing that we didn't do, and all of your comments have helped us realize this, is in the mapping requirements, we did not differentiate between the southern plume, mapping the southern plume, and mapping the northern as what we're calling the uncertain plume. So we didn't make that distinction. And maybe we need to.
Okay. Yes, Darren.
You're saying that the uncertain is the uncertainty of the background. Okay, but the background is important in this situation, but most important is the contamination, what they are responsible for. So we're certain, at least even you guys believe, that it's to the north. And the data and the science shows that also. You know, it was, what, 6 months ago, a year ago, they were wanting to almost take out the majority of the testing. So we don't need to do this one. They just throw stuff against the wall and hope something sticks. Well, I mean, we need to continue in applicants because 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, the board's stance was we are not going to change the background number until there's another study and we have that number. This is the number. Okay, in the order, it even changes the wording from background to interim number. Okay, that's not how the board, not what their stance was for years. And that's what the community had to live with and deal with, and how we had to argue our position. Okay, so the board needs to stick to what they said. You know, have the integrity to stand on your own 2 feet and finish what we started. This has taken a lot of work and a lot of time on everybody's part to get to this point. So, you know, it's not uncertain. It's we're pretty confident that PG&E's chromium 6 is known. So, you want to write on there uncertain what the background is? That's different. That's completely different. And that's all I have to say.
Okay.
Questions?
Any more questions? Comments?
Okay.
Kim, did you have something you wanted to say?
No, I was just going to move on to the next one.
Okay. If there are no further questions about this one, we'll move to the next one.
This is Doug Smith. The next issue that we attempted to tackle was the replacement water requirements. And those are on pages... Sue's probably not... Well, there they are. They're on pages 1-30 and 1-31. It's page. And Kim Niemeyer is going to handle those.
Do I need to stand up?
Yes.
Okay. So these changes had to do with when we were going to require... well, not when, but some of the details of long-term replacement water supply. So one of the first changes that we made was instead of using the term MCL, we changed that to drinking water standard. And we did that just because I think it's more clear for people to understand that the MCL is the drinking water standard. Another change that we made was... let me see where we at. Could you scroll down a little bit further, Sue? Well, it's actually right there, too. So instead of indoor uses, or it says replacement water supply for all indoor uses was taken out, and we substituted drinking and cooking uses. And this, in part, is because of the information that came from OEHA back in 2011. OEHA had opined that the health risk from hexavalent chromium was ingestion, and there was no risk from inhalation or very minimal risk. And so we can't really require all indoor uses to be provided for, but we can for drinking and cooking to protect public health. So anything that's above the MCL or the drinking water standard. So we do need to add a finding, I believe, to refer back to that original letter from OEHA and the information from there in order to support that, and we will do that. The next change was on the next page, Sue, if you could scroll down. It starts with within 45 days. So... the order had originally required for each exceedance of the drinking water standard for there to be a plan provided by PG&E for long-term replacement water. And we're still requiring that, but one of the requests that we had heard from PG&E was, you know, can we provide one plan up front and it'll still have those same requirements? And we're going to go with that because doing those each plan over and over didn't seem appropriate. But I think, you know, looking at this, we're open to ideas because, of course, there would be instances where we had this one plan that may be generic. And when we have exceedances, of course, each person's situation would be unique. And so, you know, ideas that you have for how we can incorporate some of those individual site-specific information we'd be interested in. But having the same report for each time didn't seem, it seemed overkill. Let's see. Okay. And I think those were the major changes that that we made. I'm just looking through my notes real quick. Put back on my glasses. Oh, one other change that we made in that same paragraph was we are requiring that the plan, of course, be implemented for the long-term replacement drinking water supply after the written authorization from the well owner. So we ran into this before, and it's just obvious that they can't actually implement a plan if someone doesn't want the plan to be implemented. So this is just making it clear that there is no obligation if someone does not want that long-term replacement water. So those are all the changes that we made. There's some consolidation between C and D on some of the requirements, but those were the major issues that we changed.
Questions?
I'm Laurie Kemper with the prosecution team. Thank you for the explanation on the cooking and drinking. And are you aware then that that this change in the requirement would allow just the use of under the sink type treatment systems rather than full house wellhead treatment at the location of the well?
Yes.
That this change will result in that type of system being offered? And then some follow up questions. First of all, I want to let the public know and the board know that we don't expect chromium concentrations necessarily to change very rapidly or very quickly. And so part of having a plan evaluate different types of treatment was to allow time to pass. So my question is, how will new technology be evaluated as it comes onto the market? How would you propose that be evaluated?
That's a good point. So I think that we would have to probably incorporate that in somehow because, currently the plan is just required 45 days after the order, so that we probably would want some, maybe after there was a identification of a exceedance, that PG&E would have to go back and look at that plan and maybe ensure that there weren't, not only look at the individual situations of that particular well, but perhaps have to consider new technologies. So we'll think about ways to incorporate that.
Yeah, I was going to just ask if you were aware that currently there is no certified, there are no certified treatment units that meet the new state drinking water standard. That's something that the Division of Drinking Water is just embarking on, coming up with a certification program and a testing program.
Right. Okay.
Yes, Darren.
Darren McTinker. I'll do multiple comments tonight, but up above, we saw the word uncertainty. So when you take that word uncertainty, you take it from a map to a context, it takes that on a whole another meaning. So again, it's a strong word, and it's not appropriate on this occasion.
Okay. Your comments, points of clarification? More discussion? Was there another section?
Yeah.
Okay.
Doug Smith. So the fourth item that the main item that the advisory team did was to add some things. We added some text to some of the findings, and we added an attachment 9. Which is a summary of the submittal and performance requirements. If you just want to look at the summary of the submittal and performance requirements, those start on Bates page 1-105. Sorry, Susan, I didn't give you. She's on it.
She's on it.
We tried to capture all the requirements here in one easy-to-locate spot for reference, because this is quite a long order. And we divided it up into two parts. Submittal requirements, those are monitoring reports, data, information, things like that.
Notifications.
Notification if something happens. And then the performance requirement is something for PG&E to achieve, like clean up the lower aquifer, remove all of PG&E's discharge into the lower aquifer, things like that, achieve these certain performance standards. And anyway, so that's one thing that we did. Going back to the findings, we had added some findings on the last page of the order. Oh, well, it's not the last page of the order, but on it's on where is it?
Is it not 119, the public workshops?
Yes, thank you.
119.
On Bates page 119 and mostly 120, which is page like 14 and 15 of the order, we added some findings to document some of the public information and outreach components that the board has conducted and gone through, so that so the record reflected all the input that was received at those workshops and some of the things and some of the comments that were received at that time. And we did some modifications in some of the findings throughout, and you'll see that it's you know, we made lots of different changes, and I could go through them, but there wasn't one significant issue that I didn't need to point out. But I will take questions.
I need one comment.
Oh, and Rich is going to have.
Can I make one comment?
Please do.
Have a comment.
Rich Booth, on attachment 9, the summary of the performance requirements and of the submittal requirements. Please, I would just want to make a disclaimer. If there is an oversight in there, it's a mistake. It's not an intent. I had trouble going through this with my own pea brain, so please find any errors and let me know. And don't get upset. They're oversights. Similar to the oversight, as the prosecution team pointed out. And by the way, this is, I just want to say, this is, the prosecution team point out that there was a work plan for the lower aquifer remediation that we inadvertently struck out, or should not have struck out, is how this is supposed to work. We make a mistake, the prosecution team tells us in this audience, no matter how embarrassing it may be, I think it's a great venue for everyone to see how this separation of functions work. So I just wanted to make that little editorial comment. Thanks.
Comments, questions, clarification?
Okay. Doug Smith again. We had originally noticed this to take our dinner break at 5. It looks like we may break a little early. That's okay. But and what our intent for the evening was is to do when we reconvene at when the board reconvenes here at 7 o'clock is to essentially do the same thing to extend do the same sort of workshop for the folks, especially Hinckley community folks, who weren't able to make it at the earlier session, and others. And what we're intending to do is do a recap of what was said and some of the things that were asked, and kind of recap that, rehash it, do a shortened abridged version. So that we've asked. Excuse me?
I said a one-hour version.
A one-hour version, yes. Very short. And we have asked the prosecution team and PG&E to get up and do a shortened version of what they presented and restate some of the questions that were asked and what some of those answers were for the public's benefit. So.
But there won't be a back and forth of the questions. Like we won't rehash the same questions. There'll just be a summary of what was heard
earlier.
Today.
Sure.
There will be other folks in the audience, perhaps. And
in addition to that, this is Kim Niemeyer. We also have, which is very important, we want to get to, is the update that Lisa's going to provide on things that have been going on since we last met on the cleanup and in Hinckley, and so we really want to get to that, the status report, and then a public forum. So what we're planning on is, you know, getting up, kind of summarizing what had happened. Of course, there's going to be people that weren't here, so we want to give them the opportunity to ask some questions and comment. So we'll try to keep some of the same questions and comments that we had earlier to a minimum, and we'll try and summarize that. But
okay. Yes, Doug.
Doug Smith, I do want to add this information for folks who are unable to make it back for the evening session, that our sort of next steps on this, what we're going to do is we're going to take all the comments that we receive on September 30th. The advisory team is going to evaluate those, plus all the input that we've received today and at the May workshop and all the other previous comments, put all that together, and get something out, get a proposed order out shortly thereafter. I don't want to say exactly what date, but shortly thereafter.
So sometime between September 30th and November 4th.
Yes, there.
But way in advance of that.
So way in advance.
People have a chance to digest it before the November 4th meeting.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And I have in my notes that the information that comes of this, the comments, there would be three avenues where you can find the information. The information will be posted on the web. It will be sent to the LIRIS list and emailed to those folks that regularly participate. If you do not have access to web or need other ways of getting it, if you could please see me at some point in time, give me your contact information. I'll make sure that you receive the information. Okay?
Right, that's
yes.
I just want to say something to all of you. Patty Kuyumjun, Lahontan Board. I just want to thank all of you for coming this evening. This is an iterative process. You know, we heard what you liked and what you didn't like, and you had ideas for change. And so what you're going to give us in your comments will be much appreciated. And as you've heard from us along the way, this is not set in stone, and that's why we want to talk to you about this and get your input. So thank you for your time.
Yes, Kevin.
Can I just ask, if we have a little bit of time, can I just ask a process question so we don't drag out this evening? Kevin Sullivan, PG&E. So, comments on the 30th, then the Water Board will prepare, the Advisory Committee will prepare essentially a final draft, and that will be just sometime before November, and then there's no more written comments at that point. If there's anything, you know, major or anything that's to be brought up at the November 4th meeting.
Yep.
I'm just trying to make sure everybody's clear on steps after that.
This is Kim Niemeyer. We don't intend to have another comment period because we don't intend, I mean, we tend to make, you know, some changes based on this information, but I think, you know, pretty much everything that we have here with some tweaks is, you know, what we plan to present. So there won't be another comment period. If there was a big change, then we would consider putting that big change out for a comment period.
Question again. Lori Kemper. Question on process then. Do you envision at the November 4th and 5th board meeting that it would be a public hearing and people would be able to speak? Would they be given time limits?
Yes.
Present slides, or is that going to be laid out when?
Yeah, when we put out the final draft for the board's consideration, we will also put out the hearing procedures that we plan to have for that date. And that would include, yeah, exactly what you're saying. So, time periods and so that would be the process.
So is everybody clear then? So before we take our dinner break, the dinner break will be from when we end, and we will resume at 7 p.m. here in the same place. For those of you that can't come back, remember that written comments are due September 30th. With that, I think that we will recap at 7 o'clock and then have other folks with us, and we'll go over a summary of what we've done.
You have a question.
Yes, sorry. Go ahead, sir.
Just one comment I'd like to make. We should thank the Water Board, everybody involved in it, and the hard work you've done to put
your name again, sir.
Roger Killian. The hard work that you've all done to put this together. We don't all agree on everything that's in there, that's for sure. But we do recognize that you've worked very hard to put this together. And you listen to our comments and do our things. We just want to say thank you to you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And I want to thank everyone for spending some time here today and in the past and hopefully in the future. So thank you for all your endless, tireless help on all of this.
Thank you.